The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Hello, everybody. It is the inaugural broadcast of our brand new show, Need to Know. I'm Kip Kiefer with my illustrious partner, Terry Quillian. Terry, exciting. We've got a brand new venture here.
Kip, it's going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to this, and we're so glad that all of you have joined us.
Absolutely. This is coming to you on Tony Curry Radio, and we are so proud to be affiliated with Tony, who I always embarrass him by declaring him an absolute icon in this community of Birmingham, Alabama. Wherever you're listening to us, you're already on board with Tony Curry Radio, a wise decision. And of course, we're also going to be across the Spotify platform, which is really exciting, Terry. We're kind of branching into a brand new area as we kick off our new show, Need to Know. I want you to kind of introduce the topic because, again, the title of the program, Need to Know, encompasses many things. And you had a really, what I thought was brilliant idea of how we could start this series and explain a little bit about what we're going to be talking about.
Well, in terms of Need to Know, we're going to be talking about our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, and what the real story is behind it and what those words mean. Because I think the anthem has been unfairly maligned. I can remember about a decade ago when the big deal was that it glorified war by talking about bombs bursting in air and the rocket's red glare. And I think a lot of that is just a misunderstanding of the amazing story of courage that accompanied the writing of this and the Battle of Baltimore. I, for example, mistakenly thought that the national anthem was written about a battle during the Revolutionary War. But Kip, you're the one who enlightened me. So I'll let you kick it off with, what's the real story about the battle behind the Star Spangled Banner?
Well, it all emanates from an unlikely source, both in venue and personality. The battle that you alluded to was actually in the harbor, the outer harbor of Baltimore, Maryland. And the entity being attacked was a fort that guarded the inner harbor of Baltimore, Fort McHenry. And a lot of Americans probably are not familiar at all with that particular military installation in the early 1800s. But Baltimore was a thriving port for a brand new nation. We had just adopted our constitutional laws that are still in place now in 1787. So you're looking at a gap of about 25 years before we were engaged in yet another war with Great Britain, the War of 1812. And the Star Spangled Banner was written by also an unlikely individual in the personage of Francis Scott Key, who was a lawyer and a writer and a poet in that age. And how the circumstances that led to him being there, it was no 24-hour news cycle in those days, no immediacy, but the Star Spangled Banner, the song, is his basic visual account of what transpired that night in the Baltimore Harbor.
And you know, part of what I found really interesting is how important that Battle of Baltimore was, because the British had already engaged the Americans at a place. I'm pronouncing it wrong. Y'all forgive me. I've got the Texas pronunciation going here. Bladensburg.
Yes.
And in that, the American forces, it's really embarrassing, went scampering away when they saw the British military, the redcoats, with their gleaming bayonets. And it was so embarrassing that it became known as the Bladensburg Races, which is frightening. That led to the British actually being able to invade what at the time was called Washington City and burn down the White House. This was really serious. And, you know, the British know how to add insult to injury, because the Madisons were just about to sit down to dinner when they heard that the British were invading and they fled. Do you know that the British actually ate their dinner before they burned the White House? So now the British are kind of flush with victory and they're feeling really good about themselves. So they're heading on to the America's third largest city, Baltimore. And this is a big deal. This is no small battle, because if Baltimore falls, it's likely that we are going to lose the War of 1812 and we will no longer be the United States of America. We will once again be a British colony.
And I think what you just related there is so important, because in this day where the Star Spangled Banner, the song, and the Star Spangled Banner was actually a name given by the commander of Fort McHenry, William Armistead, for the actual flag he ordered, which was 42 by 30 feet, for the express purpose of being a symbol to any invader, aka the British, that this is an American territory. This is the symbol of our country.
Exactly. And he wanted a flag that was a garrison size flag, specifically, he said, so that the British could see it if they came sailing in.
Yes.
And he ordered that before the battle, and having no idea how important that large flag was going to be. When you learn more about what actually happened during the battle, you understand that the United States was not attacking anyone. The United States was not launching the rockets. Right? They were not producing the bombs bursting in air. Share with our audience, Kip, a little bit about what was going on in that battle and what the circumstances were.
Well, basically, a fleet of approximately 50 British ships had entered the outer harbor of Baltimore, armed with cannons that had far more reach than the equivalent for the Americans' armaments. You have to remember, this is the most sophisticated military in the entire world at the time. And we were a 20-something-year-old, you know, just ragtag kind of a bunch of citizens, basically, trying to defend the concept that was totally foreign to the world at that time. A free society. Freedom is the key word here. And it's what's lost in modern interpretations of what this country stands for. These people were willing to give their lives for the preservations of freedoms. And it's such a remarkable thing that this ragtag bunch in this fort with cannons that couldn't even reach far enough to attack, to counterattack their, the fusillade of armaments that was being rained down on the fort, determinedly held that spot, knowing what could happen. I mean, theoretically, Terry, a couple of weeks ago when we celebrated the 70th anniversary of the Queen on the throne in Britain, we may have been a direct participant in that, because if the British had been successful of taking Baltimore Harbor, it could have opened the door for, once again, colonizing this country. And I, for one, don't miss tea and crumpets and having bad teeth. So I'm really glad for the heroic efforts of our counterparts back in that situation.
And so, the Americans were so badly outgunned. The British had 50 huge vessels there. They had armaments that they could stay far enough away, as you said, that the Americans didn't have anything that could hit the British ships. And yet they could launch bombs and rockets that would hit the Americans. In some ways, the battle of Fort McHenry was really the War of 1812 version of the Battle of the Alamo, just with a much better outcome for the Americans. But how was Francis Scott Key involved in this at all?
Fascinating. It all goes back to the same principle that we witnessed today. He was friends with a bureaucrat named John Skinner. Yes, just 20 some odd years in, we had political appointments and people running around with titles and jobs. Mm-hmm. And John Skinner's job was with the federal government, the negotiator of prisoner of like executive prisoners of war, not the run of the mill soldiers, but high levels, you know,
diplomat.
Generals.
Diplomat.
Exactly. That's well
prisoners.
Said.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, John Skinner involved Francis Scott Key because he was a smooth talking lawyer and successful, you know, writer. And they you just came across interesting information that they actually went there almost a week before the battle because a doctor friend of theirs, Dr. Beans, had been taken as a prisoner of war by the British. And you have a lot of interesting facts about that.
Well, this is just to give you an idea how lackadaisical some of the American citizenry was at the time. The British are marching through the town and Dr. Beans and his wife were having dinner guests over. Dr. Beans goes outside to tell the British troops to be quiet. Now, isn't this amazing? You're just going to be like eating dinner. And it turned out that Dr. Beans had been treating a lot of wounded British soldiers. He wasn't treasonous at all. He just saw a patient was a patient. So these soldiers had been coming to his home to be treated as they were fighting the battle. So he thought he could just go outside and tell them to be quiet. Well, they took him as prisoner of war. And as a prisoner of war, he was then subject to treatment as a basic criminal. He was a very beloved doctor. And the whole idea was that Francis Scott Key could negotiate his release by talking about what he had done for the British.
And it succeeded. They did release him to them, but they did not let them leave. This happened 6 days before the actual attack on Fort McHenry, because the British feared that during their negotiation that they overheard key information about their plans to attack the Baltimore Harbor. So, yes, Dr. Beans was released to their custody, but they were held captive, basically, or at least detained until the assault had taken place. So that's how Francis Scott Key found his way to the battle scene.
Right. So he's on a ship, on a British ship out in the harbor, and he's having to watch in horror because he knows, and they did overhear the plans because, again, the British, being British, decided to discuss their plans over dinner while the American negotiators were present. So they were very well aware. Francis Scott Key was very well aware of how badly outgunned the American forces were. So there they are praying that the Americans will survive this, knowing the huge amount of power that the British have behind them. And the Brits are expecting at any moment that what's going to happen is they're raining down this terrifying amount of firepower, that they're going to see the white flag being hoisted over Fort McHenry. But Kip, that's not what happened.
Not at all. And the determination that this ragtag group defending this fort showed against the most powerful military naval force assembled up to that time is just remarkable. And anyone in this day and age that doesn't realize, and this was a follow-up to the most unlikely. I used the example recently that if you had set betting odds in Las Vegas, which of course didn't exist yet, on the Revolutionary War, the Americans would have probably been about a 50-point underdog. I mean, it should have been no match. But after defeating the British in the Revolutionary War, to be facing off with them again, you know, and have this group of really non-professionals, volunteers, probably bakers and farmers and the like. And they continually made sure that the flag was flying high and proud, because the sign, as you just mentioned, of capitulation, of, you know, this raining down of weaponry on them all afternoon and into the night. You know, lesser men would have said enough of this, but these guys understood the repercussions and stood firm. And anybody who loves this country and embraces the freedoms that we have, this is one of many, many examples of how Americans have stood up in the face of sure destruction and been willing to give their lives for all the liberties and all the wonderful things we enjoy and are supposed to be celebrating on this 4th of July weekend.
Yes, when Francis Scott Key talks about the bombs bursting in air, he's talking about mortar bombs, some of them weighing up to 200 pounds that were being launched in some cases from as far away from Fort McHenry as 2 miles, and yet landing there with the hope of just annihilating the soldiers that were there. They also had a new kind of rocket, the Rocket's Red Glare. Those were new rockets called Congreve rockets, and they screeched toward the fort, Kip, with the hopes of setting fire to the fort. So when yes. he's talking about the Rocket's Red Glare, that's exactly what it was. It was just amazing, and the bombs bursting in air. I think it's crucial that we as Americans know it wasn't our rockets. It wasn't our bombs in the air. Those rockets with the red glare and the bombs bursting in air were being lobbed at the American forces. We were the ones under fire in this battle.
So, I mean, just picture yourself in that fort, which, you know, it's not an elaborate, I think tree forts today are probably more intricate than the 17 and 1800 versions of so-called forts. It, just basically a giant wall, and you hear him use the word rampart in the national anthem, the lyrics that became the Star-Spangled Banner. Rampart, of course, is a defensive wall, which I'm sure was, reinforced the best that it could be for that age. But you're just on the other side of that wall, hoping against hope that your fort can withstand the unbelievable amount of firepower. And they, throughout the night, soldiers were deployed to climb to the top and make sure the flag was still intact.
Put them at tremendous jeopardy. Can you imagine having to climb to the top of the fort with rockets and bombs bursting in the air all around you, and your mission is to make sure the flag is still flying?
It's inconceivable. And it goes back to the point I was making earlier that whenever you people used to sing the national anthem a lot, I would love to see us get back to that, although Americans still demonstrate at times that they enjoy doing that. But if you just listen to the words, this is kind of the earliest form of, you know, a journalist. It reminds me, remember the initial attacks on Iraq and the CNN crew that was hunkered down in their hotel room actually filming and describing what was happening. That was just an absolute, you know, monumental moment in journalistic history, because these guys were witnessing the outbreak of war and describing it as it happened. That is, in essence, 200 years before what Francis Scott Key did with his writings. Of course, he had no broadcast ability, but the words of the national anthem are, and the Star Spangled, I should be calling it the Star Spangled Banner, because it wasn't the national anthem officially until 1931, which is another remarkable aspect of this. The words to the Star Spangled Banner, which was the name of the actual flag, are his personal observations of exactly what happened. So I find that fascinating.
I think, too, it becomes so meaningful. The verse that says, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. The thing is, there is Key out on a British military ship, a mile at least away from the fort, the only way at night that he could see the flag, the proof that the flag was still there, was the British rockets and bombs lighting up the sky. And as the rockets and the bombs would light up the sky, he could look and see the proof that our flag was still there, which meant the Americans were not surrendering. And interestingly, Kip, they had taken down that garrison style flag during the battle because it was a really precious flag. At the time, it had 15 stripes because this was when we had a stripe for every one of the states, 15 stars and 15 stripes. And they had put up a storm flag, which is typically what you fly during the battle because it doesn't matter how ragged it gets. Then as dawn was breaking, Armistead had them rehoist the large garrison flag. And that's what first thing in the morning, Francis Scott Key was able to see flying as well.
And you can't blame him. I mean, we look at what the Pentagon, you know, spends now, $3,000 for a toaster. When Armistead originally requested to have this giant flag for his fort, Terry, the price tag, $406.90 for the lady who sewed it. Wow, that was a lot of money back in those days. And I guess the reckless spending of government was already a thing.
It had already started then, but kept the price was partially because she used the precious material of cotton to put the stars there. So the thing that really bothers me these days, Kip, is when I see the kind of disrespect for our flag and disrespect for the national anthem, I am infuriated knowing the story behind it because I'm thinking about the amazing bravery of those soldiers back in 1814 and what they did, what they withstood, that the Star Spangled Banner is talking about. So the idea that you are going to refuse to stand for the Star Spangled Banner, that you're going to stay in your locker room because you don't want to cause any kind of controversy, man, what kind of weak-willed, lily-livered cowards have our nation turned into? Think of that compared to those soldiers that would bravely go out to make sure that the flag was still flying under complete bombardment with no hope of being able to fire back at all.
And I maybe I'm an optimist, but I truly believe that if a lot of people would absorb the information that we just discussed and really know the true story about how this happened, it's not a song glorifying war in
at
any
all
way, shape, or form. It's it's glorifying the what you just mentioned, the bravery and the commitment to freedom, which at that time was a concept that was completely foreign. The whole world basically was governed by monarchies at the time. You were at the service of the crown, and this whole concept of America, the last lines of the Star Spangled Banner, the flag still, you know, is waving over the land of the free and the home of the brave. That speaks volumes and should be timeless to every American who relishes their freedom.
And what Francis Scott Key was actually thinking at the moment, the more I've learned about this, is thank God our flag is still there.
Yes.
And I, you know, thank God our flag is still there. I thank the Lord every day for that. And armed with more information about the Star Spangled Banner with the 4th of July holiday, I'm more proud than ever, and I'm always proud to be an American. And I hope that patriotism and respect for our flag and respect for the U.S. military and what the U.S. military was doing. And when you say U.S. military, back in 1814, there really wasn't a military. It was predominantly,
no,
other than the officers, is predominantly, you know, your fishermen, your builders, your bakers. It was the locals taking up arms against the British was really what it was. We had a very small standing army at that time.
Well, we thought it was a good start on Need to Know, because what we want to do with our program is just come up with some different angles of a variety of subjects and kind of cut through all of the agenda and the mistruths and the lack of knowledge and just kind of lend a little bit of a light on exactly what are the stories and what are in, not necessarily, we're not going to be a historical show per se.
Definitely not. This is probably the only historical segment.
This was a great theme, and I give you total credit for coming up with it, because it's such a great theme on a weekend that we celebrate America's 246th birthday, to have perspective of the things that symbolize this country, its heritage, its history, and its traditions, and what it stands for. And no matter what side of the aisle you're on ideologically, if you're an American, you have to have appreciation for the sacrifice that so many people made to make you a free person.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been great. We are so excited to be on the Tony Curry Radio Network, and also to be present now on Spotify and some other platforms. We can't wait to each week to come to you and tell you what you need to know. Terry, any final thoughts as we get ready to celebrate America's birthday?
Well, I have one lighthearted final thought. I've had the honor of serving two presidents. And the first president that I served was President George W. Bush. And I was part of the team running an event where we had a mistake happen with the music at the end as the president was exiting the stage and coming down to the rope line to shake hands with folks. Someone accidentally pressed the button and the Star Spangled Banner started playing. And I want you to know, President Bush, with his immense patriotism, stopped, turned on a dime, faced the American flag, the largest flag in the room, put his hand over his heart, and did not move one inch until the conclusion of that song, because you do not stop it and start, you don't start it and stop it in the middle. So that was an interesting observation. Those of us in charge of that heard a lot about that afterwards, but that's the kind of respect that's supposed to be played, to be paid to the Star Spangled Banner.
Well, again, I'm glad I don't have to say jolly good all the time. I have great appreciation for the men who stood up to the British, who basically withdrew and gave up the plan to attempt to recolonize America. And that was very fortuitous for each and every one of us. Terry, this has been so much fun. I can't wait to our next show. I'm Kip Kiefer, and we hope you have a wonderful holiday weekend, and we look forward to visiting you again next week with another edition of Need to Know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.